Oh, sure.
Is Esther telling us it's time to go to work?
I think she is. She's bossy in her roundabout way.
No, you know, ever since she got that 3-year award, have you noticed it?
Oh, yeah, no, she's in charge. Yeah.
Three.
A lot of people don't handle fame that well.
Sorry.
Oh, well. Good morning. It is 10 a.m., December 30th, 2010. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting at our all of our regularly scheduled meetings seem to be a little off schedule this year, so why not have our usual annual New Year's Eve meeting the day before New Year's Eve? Of course, tomorrow being a holiday, we don't run any risk of anybody screwing us up tomorrow. We hope. Yeah, there's always the potential. But at any rate, we always have a meeting the last working day of the year, of course, to tie up any loose ends and then to finish any work that is required to be done at the end of the year, and it happens this year on a Thursday. So welcome to everybody. This is Kevin Kramer along with Tony Clark and Brian Kalkall in attendance, wishing everybody a happy new year and be safe when you're out on the roads, if you have to be out on the roads during one of these storms that we're supposed to be having in the next couple of days. With that, any other comments from my colleagues?
Good morning and welcome.
I just also want to echo Kevin and Tony's thank you and welcome, but also a special thanks to the PSC staff that in another year, everybody here has really done a great job. There's just so much going on in the PSC, kind of like what I said at the Christmas party, but you know, got rate cases coming and going, pipelines, power lines, but the staff just really continues to do a great job. And we're putting together the budget testimony, and one of the agencies that's got, you know, smaller group of people doing a lot of great things, and we're going to be coming in under budget. So just thank the staff for all the good work this year.
And it's a very new staff heading into 2011 compared to a year ago, too. So that's kind of fun. Not that we didn't appreciate all those other people, too. Anyway, with that, I'd move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. KC1. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order issuing certificate of corridor compatibility number 116 and route permit number 126 to Highland Operating LLC for the construction of an 8-inch pipeline in McKenzie County, North Dakota, for the transmission of end-use consumer quality gas, case number PU10555.
Second.
This is the 5-mile, 8-inch natural gas pipeline that we had a hearing on in Watford City, seemed like yesterday. It was another snowy day in December. I guess we've had a lot of those where we barely got home. But anyway, it is 5 miles. It takes natural gas, consumer quality natural gas from the Highland Gas Processing Facility, which I believe is still under construction, near Cartwright, North Dakota. The 5 miles takes the gas to two interstate pipeline facilities, one being the WBI pipeline, which, of course, provides a lot of we'd call domestic consumer natural gas here in our area, and then the other one being the Northern Border Interstate Pipeline, which takes natural gas to the to markets in the Chicago area. Total cost of this project was about $3.5 million. The capacity, I think, is about 70 million cubic feet per day. Most likely the flow rate will be somewhere around 50 million cubic feet per day. I think that's about the capacity of the Highland processing facility. So everything seems to be in order, and I'd recommend a passage.
Not the biggest line we've ever cited, but it's an awfully important one for that plant. It's the way they get the product to market.
In that area, we're producing, I think, somewhere around 300 and probably close to 350 million cubic feet per day in North Dakota of natural gas, and the flaring continues to be above the average, above where we'd like it to be. At the same time, it's hard to keep up, but the plants, the companies are doing a good job with both the pipelines and the processing facilities try to keep up with the growing supply of a product that, quite frankly, is priced so low that it's hardly economical. And so that's another part of the tension, the price risk that these companies face. At the same time, we hate to see it flared, and this certainly helps in that effort.
All in favor?
Aye. KC2, I move the commission approve The Beulah Zapp Phase 12 and Columbus Phase 11 and 12 construction projects is the major projects for abandoned mine reclamation in 2011, and submit the 2011 to 2014 North Dakota Abandoned Mine Lands Reclamation Simplified Grant Application to the Office of Surface Mining to request $3,425,951 in federal funds for the Abandoned Mine Lands Program. Whenever we have to file for the simplified grant, we of course have to identify the major projects, the priority projects for the year, and that's why the Columbus phases 11 and 12 and then the Beulah Zapp phase 12 projects are listed as priorities for next year's major construction projects. The Columbus projects involve the elimination of about 2.5 miles of high walls and abandoned surface mines south of Columbus. And this site's characterized by unstable high walls that are more than 70 feet high in some areas. And then there's, of course, erosion features along the high walls and other things. A Beulah Zapp project involves drilling and pumping pressurized grout into collapsed underground mine workings under public roads north of Beulah. And, of course, both of these projects have been around a long time. And it's obvious when you look at the fact that we are now on phase 12 of the two projects. There are, of course, always some smaller projects and emergencies throughout the years. Now, this nearly $3.5 million is the new money. Added to that are some carryover funds, which brings the total for the period up to nearly $4 million. And one of the unique, I think, things about this cycle, Jim, if I remember right, is that we've always, whenever there have been emergencies, we've been able to go to OSM with some emergency funding requests, but those days are sort of over, at least for now. And so, but at the same time, we have so much more money available that it's incumbent upon us to manage it in a way that allows us to have some money in case emergencies pop up. And I don't know, there aren't many years that one doesn't, it seems like, an emergency of some sort. So everything seems to be in order. People, of course, always do such a great job, and we're glad to be able to continue to provide that service.
Of course, we shouldn't get overly giddy because we're only getting the money back that we've paid into the fund over many, many years. For years, North Dakota was a net contributor to that fund and wasn't getting back all of the money paid in. And when I say North Dakota, I mean our coal companies and they're passing through their cost to electricity consumers. So it's good to see at least some of that money coming back for the purpose for which it was intended.
All in favor?
Aye.
KC3, I move the Commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to 30 days, and assess a filing fee of $71,000 due upon filing of an application in case number PU10666, Verpa Energy LLC's proposed gas processing plant in McKenzie County, North Dakota.
Second.
Well, just like the previous order, I guess this is another response to the growing supply of natural gas in the Bakken. Bearpaw, in fact, whenever I get these, I have to go back and look at history again, remind myself, you know, didn't we just do this? And it seems like we just did that. We just sited the Garden Creek facility, which is a 100 million cubic foot facility that's currently under construction now in McKenzie County. This is yet another one owned by Bearpaw, a subsidiary of One Oak, this called the State Line processing facility. It too will be a 100 million cubic foot per day facility near the state line between, of course, North Dakota and Montana. They currently operate a state line facility that's, I think, about 60 million cubic feet per day. The interesting thing, among other things, about this processing facility is that they're building it with the possibility and the anticipation that there would be a state line two expansion on the same location. So, again, this is another 100 million cubic feet per day of processing capacity in the Bakken with Bakken crude. We are, as I said earlier, continuing to see far too much flaring. And when I say far too much, any is too much in the cold climates of North Dakota. But the companies are stepping up with investments that help alleviate some of that flaring. The cost of this project is anticipated to be about $142 million. The construction of the plant, they'd like to get started in the spring, in April of 2011, which means that I expect that we'll be getting an application, I guess somewhere around 30 days from now when the waiting period is over, and try to get that sited so that they can begin construction in April, and then that would be finished by August of 2012 if everything goes according to schedule.
The one thing I would add on just we talked a lot about natural gas over the last few months, and it's this next year I think we'll even see more of it. But no matter what happens on, you know, the federal energy policy, that there seems like there's going to be a market for natural gas. You can make electricity out of it. You can put it in vehicles. You can heat with it. So I think that's the key thing that we're seeing, is that there's some certainty with what natural gas can be used for, which is driving this investment now. So it's good we're doing it, and I look forward to doing more of it the next year.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That ends items in my portfolio, Commissioner Clark.
Thank you. Item TC1, I move the commission acknowledge its December 20th issuance of a notice of rescheduled hearing in case number PU08797 Sequoia Energy U.S. Inc.'s proposed 150-megawatt wind energy conversion facility in Rolette County, North Dakota.
Second.
This is one of two victims of weather that we have on the agenda today, two hearings that we lost due to blizzard or near blizzard conditions, and by all accounts it was the right call in both cases to cancel them. This hearing has been rescheduled from December 20th in Rolla to January 24th in Rolla at 10:30 a.m. Central Time in the City Commission hearing room.
I was actually in Rolla. Esther, what day was I at Killarney? Tuesday, I think. Did I go to a funeral Tuesday? Yeah, Tuesday at Killarney, which is just north of Rolla on the Manitoba side. And I was validated by many people. Said, you made the right call. Not coming to Rolla, including Tracy Bowe's wife, who is my wife's cousin.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC2. I move the commission issue a notice of rescheduled hearing in the application of NXGO Development Corp. for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize construction of a proposed 150-megawatt wind energy conversion facility in Dickey and McIntosh counties of North Dakota, case number PU08932.
Second.
We're going to be filling in the blank on this one. It's going to be sometime in February in our administrative hearing. We will do that. This, again, was another weather-related cancellation. The commission, when canceling these, takes a number of things into consideration, but not the least of which is not whether we can sort of get into the town and whether the town itself is open, but we realize that, especially with these wind farms and really most of the projects we cite, they tend to be rural sites. So you're talking about, you know, landowners, farmers, and ranchers who are out there who the day of and the day after a blizzard, it's even tougher for them to get around sometimes than the folks in the cities who have plows to come plow them out. So, and those are the very people we want to hear from, are the landowners who have difficulty getting in. So we are on the side of caution, but also err on the side of ensuring that people who want to get to our hearings are able to do so.
I would add that we're going to fill the date in, but it will be at Teddy's Grill, no matter what.
It will be at Teddy's Grill.
Yeah, because he's picking us up at the airport.
He's picking us up at the airport.
Teddy, that is.
All in favor?
Aye.
TC3, I move the commission extend the deadline for filing claims until January 18th, 2011, publish an extension of notice to file claims in the Cavalier County Republican, and serve the papers, the parties of record, in Organic Grain and Milling, Inc., Grain Warehouse Insolvency, case number GE 10-327.
Second.
This is related to the Organic Grain and Milling insolvency. Organic Grain had operated 124,000 bushel grain warehouse at Clyde, North Dakota, and they had a $62,500 bond on file. The commission, as part of its insolvency process, had previously received a number of claims and had closed them as of November 18th, which was the deadline for filing claims. There were a number of claims that were received, including 177,000 one on behalf of Kodiak Farms Limited, but then about $55,000 spread over four additional claims. There was a late claim that was filed by an individual. Compared to the rest, it's relatively small, of about $414, but nonetheless important to that particular producer. After an initial review of the claims, it appeared that most of them were credit sale contracts and therefore could be applied to the credit sale contract fund, which has more than sufficient funds to cover those. The bond itself would appear to cover the more than cover the one cash sale claim of about $23,000. And again, these are after initial an initial screening, an initial review, and staff will continue to sort through them. The question was if we extend the filing deadline so that we could accept the late filed claim in this particular case with adequate reserves on hand to pay both, it would appear, both claimants and interest money on top of that. Thought it would be a good idea to extend that so that that producer can get in on the trusteeship as well.
All in favor?
Aye. TC4, I move the commission file a request for relief from stay with the United States Bankruptcy Court for the District of North Dakota to permit the commission to commence an action in North Dakota District Court to secure the commission's appointment as trustee under the insolvency provisions of Chapter 60-04 of North Dakota Century Code in Grabansky Grain, LLC, Grain Warehouse Insolvency, case number GE-10-498. This is one of those bankruptcy proceedings that we sometimes have with tied up with insolvency proceedings of Grain Warehouse. The Grabansky Grain Warehouse, as you may recall, was located in Grafton. In order for the commission to really do anything at all with regard to an elevator that's in bankruptcy court, we have to get permission from the bankruptcy court to do anything. This one, you may remember, was one that we previously received authorization from bankruptcy court to transfer the license to St. Hilaire Seed Company outside of the bankruptcy proceeding, and that has been done. So that elevator in Grafton is actually, and the physical elevator itself is being used by a different entity now, but the insolvency continues. And so we need to get a relief from stay from the bankruptcy court if we're to proceed any farther, and that's what this paperwork does, seeks to do.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That ends the items in my portfolio.
Very good. That ends the items on the regular agenda. Our next commission meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, January 12th. And between now and then, probably the biggest event that we have going is on that same day. Well, I shouldn't say between now and then. I guess on that same day right after the meeting, after our informal hearing. At 3 o'clock, we have our budget hearing, our initial budget hearing before the Senate Appropriations Committee. That's January 12th at 3 o'clock. And then there are a number of formal hearings that are on the schedule starting January 20th that will have some interest, I suppose. Any other announcements you guys can think of? All right. Are there any questions?
I want to get a clarification about the amount of natural gas that is being processed in North Dakota right now.
Well, it's a good question. We're producing about near 350 million cubic feet per day. Processed, I have to sort of add it up in my head. The capacity, when I say process, the capacity that's either being constructed or the processing that's currently taking place is pretty significant. I mean, it's well over that. So if once, for example, Hess finishes the Tioga upgrade, that'll be 250 million cubic feet. I mentioned the Bear Paw Garden Creek plant that's under construction. That's another 100 million cubic feet. This now state line Bear Paw project is 100 million cubic feet. Highland has this 50 million cubic foot or 60 million cubic foot facility under construction now. And there are right now 8 processing facilities in western North Dakota. Most of them are the smaller below our siting jurisdiction. So we're probably not as familiar with them as we used to be. But we're producing about 340, 350 million cubic feet per day currently. And I think flaring about 17% of, as well, of the potential processing facility or processing capacity.
There's other raw gas, which is shipped out of state, which I think Kevin alluded to, but that goes out on the Alliance pipeline.
And you mentioned the price thing, because it's down around 4 or 5 MCF.
It's actually about 4, I think, now. The most recent director's cut that I read, I think it was Williston Basin was about 390. Of course, you know, that's a pretty fluid number, if you excuse the expression. That's a pretty fluid number. But it's hard to make it work at $4, quite honestly. The shallow gas production, for example, of North Dakota, it's really below it's below economically feasible to actually go after. But we, of course, have laws against flaring. So, there's only so long you can do that without a waiver. And, of course, one of the issues sometimes that a waiver is allowed under is economics. But it can work, but it takes some real efficiencies.
And the low cost of natural gas, in a sense, has a bigger impact on other states than North Dakota production, because the important thing to remember about North Dakota is that natural gas is primarily a byproduct of the oil production. So this is an oil-first play, and oil prices remain very strong, and so there's continues to be the incentive to go after the oil itself. As Kevin said, we have anti-flaring laws, so they have to do something with the gas at some point, and so it's really the oil that's driving the natural gas production in North Dakota. In other parts of the country where it's a natural gas-first play, it becomes an even more significant issue, and it's kind of a good news, bad news thing. I mean, the good news is for consumers, especially in a state that's very dependent on natural gas for winter heating, and in a winter that appears to be a very cold one, it's good to have low natural gas prices because it's good for our residential consumers. The bad news is that really cheap natural gas only buys you really expensive natural gas down the line, because what happens nationally is people start shuttering the wells, and then you have the oversupply becomes an undersupply, and gas prices shoot back up. So gas can be a cyclical market and a fairly volatile one because of that issue. Cheap gas buys you high gas, and high gas buys you cheap gas.
If I remember correctly, several years ago, the commission was railing against using natural gas in power plants because the price of natural gas was pretty high at the time, and how things have changed.
Well, they have changed a lot, largely due to, besides what Tony just referred to as the natural gas that comes with this incredible oil production, but of course there's also a similar phenomenon in shale natural gas production. So what was once a very, and still is a finite resource, but was a very finite resource, where to the point where, we were talking about additional liquid natural gas ports along the coasts and both sides of both the coasts of the United States, and shipping in low-cost natural gas from other continents. Obviously, that's over. And so, of course, that supply-demand curve has now come to the consumer's advantage. But again, it's got to be enough so that it's economically feasible to go after as well. So, yes, things have changed a lot. But I will say, Dave, I still have concerns. In fact, I have probably more concern today because of the low cost of natural gas, that it becomes an easy out for utility companies to build more natural gas generating facilities, which go up quickly. They're inexpensive to build, and of course now they have an inexpensive fuel source. But the volatility of that fuel source, I think, subjects American consumers to an equally volatile, of course, price of electricity. And that concerns me greatly when you consider that we sit on some less expensive, much more abundant resources like coal, and let's not forget nuclear potential.
As others have pointed out, the quickest way to get $9 natural gas is for everybody to build electric power plants based on $4 natural gas. And that's the concern. But and Kevin's right. It's hard to underestimate the impact of the shale gas play. I mean, there's a lot of talk about the supply curve itself actually having shifted. And it has a worldwide impact on how natural gas is used in Europe. And of course here in the United States, the hope is that at some point, because a shale gas play is almost more like, as much like manufacturing gas as it is like kind of wildcatting, as we used to think about it, that we know the gas is there, it's a matter of actually producing it, that hopefully over time you get some stability in the price itself, where they know about what it costs to get the gas out of the ground and to manufacture it, and you get stability as opposed to these fits and spurts in the gas market. But it it appears like nationwide, gas seems to be what everybody is using to, as a this incremental fuel source to power electricity. It has environmental attributes that make it a lot easier to permit, and when the price is cheap, it looks awfully good, and when the price is high, it doesn't look so good. But that's something that utility companies and regulators are going to be struggling with over the next several years.
So was T. Boone Pickens right?
About which part?
About half the time.
Okay. Well, he's pushing natural gas.
Well, Dave, I think that it's a huge energy source that's going to be a bigger and bigger piece of meeting energy demands, and I that's just the way it's going to be, in my opinion. Right now, the national demand is down because the economy is down. As the economy comes back up, the demand's going to spike up, and then so how we're going to meet that demand? We'll probably need every bit of coal that we have online, and every bit of wind, and every bit of gas and natural gas. I think can also, you know, the transportation fleet. There's another opportunity there, but as Tony and Kevin have talked about, the fluctuation in prices will cause some problems. But we're going to need to use natural gas, and it's so flexible. That's where I see it being a bigger and bigger play, because regardless of the cost, they'll find some use for it, because I think other costs will also go up.
Yeah, I mean, the cornerstone of the Pickens plan was moving the transportation sector over to natural gas, which
At $4,
yeah, it looks great. But at the same time, if we're moving the entire transportation sector over to natural gas and we're moving all of electricity over to natural gas, there's a very real concern about what happens to prices. I understand where he's going with it. At the same time, sometimes I worry that discussion about national energy policy at that level starts to look like industrial planning, where you've got the government trying to pick what the right energy resources are, and it's at some point, it almost can't help but be wrong, because if they're driving everyone to that, in retrospect, prices are going to go up and it'll look wrong. And I sort of would lean more towards having the marketplace pick that. And if oil and gas are going to be the cheaper way to power the transportation sector, then that's going to have to be looked at. If natural gas is, then that would naturally be more looked at. The question and concern is, from a national security standpoint, can we move more of that energy production onshore into safer neighborhoods in the world and away from places that aren't so safe? And that is, I think, a very real concern.
Of course, the other half of the Pickens plan involved the federal government building a massive transmission system that would support wind as well. And that doesn't seem to be happening either. And and let's not forget, T. Boone Pickens is largely a gas guy.
Sure.
Yeah.
Off the wall question. You have the MDU rate case that's pending for.
We're scheduling today for our first work session.
You've got the new XL rate case that's just been filed, and it's a two-part case, from what I understand. One for 2011, one for 2012. Correct. Something like
a couple of phases.
It's kind of a phase in.
Otter Tail's got something pending.
We've heard that yet officially, but we just finished them up here.
Rate case.
they have a case in front of. I suppose it's a case in Minnesota that they've made us aware of relating to upgrades to Big Stone 1 to meet possible EPA rules, which somewhere around $500 million, I think.
Sure. But that leads to the question: you'd been talking for about a year. These things are going to start coming more frequently now, and
sure,
this is coming to fruition.
Yeah, it is, Dave, and thanks for noticing, by the way. The couple of things are at play. One thing we have to remember about the XL rate case, for example, is that in the previous rate case, one of the conditions of the increase was that they could not file another rate case for 2 years, and of course, tomorrow is the 2-year anniversary of that order. So nobody's surprised by the XL rate case, and that's fine. And quite honestly, I mean, I think one of the things that one of the consequences of not having rate cases over decades is larger rate cases when they occur, and that probably a more frequent review of companies' rates and rate structures and design and all of that is probably more prudent than what we've been doing. So to that degree, you know, I think we welcome more of this process. The other thing is, and that we've probably been talking about for a year, is that, of course, we've been citing a lot of major electric generation infrastructure, especially in the form of wind farms and, of course, transmission lines that are associated with those. And at some point, the companies have to recover the costs of those. In the case of Otter Tail, you referred to earlier, you know, we've done some riders and things like that. And the other companies are doing it differently, and that's fine. And so, yes, we're starting to see the economic needs being met, as well as now the generation and transmission needs.
Dave, I think it's a good idea for companies to come in more often than less often for rate cases, because it gives us the opportunity to get in and scrutinize what they're doing. I mean, that's what we do, is, you know, regulate what they do. And when those rate cases come in, our staff gets a chance to go through it, advocacy staff, people can intervene. And if we do these more frequently, they won't be so difficult, if you will. If we have rate cases every 2 years, they'll be easier to do than if we have them every 10 years. So I don't see that as a bad thing at all. Mm-hmm. Just one more thing to do, but that's what we're supposed to do.
Some states actually, by either rule or statute, have frequent rate cases. I think Wisconsin has them every 2 years. Now, I don't know if I'd go so far as to advocate that, because you'd almost be in a constant rate case. But more frequent ones aren't a bad idea. I mean, just from a standpoint of, as Kevin and Brian suggest, you know, if you go 25 years between rate cases, which we've had, then things just, you know, can get out of whack, basically. You know, you're making huge changes all at once, as opposed to making incremental changes along the way. And it's not even necessarily about the end rate itself, whether they have to be, you know, rate increases or decreases. It's more of the idea that you're doing a constant review, and the utility company has an ability to be communicating with you about what they're doing, and you have an ability to communicate with them, as opposed to having long periods of time and then trying to address everything all at once, which is very difficult for both the company and for the regulatory agency.
Well, and the consumers, the customers, they get more attuned to rate cases going on, to the process. They can come to the public hearings, the public meetings. They can come and get involved, where they get used to, okay, there's a process that the companies go in front of the PSC. We have our say for it. Because right now, I mean, every time people hear rate increase, they're like, you know, obviously they don't want it. But if they start to understand the process, that they're involved in it, that we do it, there's scrutiny, I think that creates better trust all the way for all three groups, if you will.
Yeah, I think consumer confidence should be enhanced by regular rate cases. I think that's a good point.
All of us have been on the different media outlets about all these rate cases, and I think we say the same thing, that come to the public meetings, come to the hearings, tell us your piece, like that fellow from Crosby to intervene. I mean, that's the kind of things that the public can do, that once they understand the process better, I think we'll see more of it, which will create a better end product.
We're also, as you know, Dave, I mean, we're also a very lean public service commission. I mean, we have the leanest public utilities staff in the country, and, you know, we don't have a bank of auditors that are in their books deep every year and things like that. So, yeah, regular rate cases are, I think, a benefit to both the utilities, the consumers, and certainly to the Public Service Commission. There's nothing else. We'll recess for about 5 minutes, sign orders, and get our calendars ready.